little bubbles. It's about at least 10 minutes at a stretch. Outside is best, but it doesn't really matter. It's two meditations, meditation on impermanence and meditation on light, both of which increase the joy. Not to mention collect children, it collects children around you when you do it in public. But it's a very good meditation practice, very easy to do. You just keep blowing them for like 10 minutes at a time, 15 minutes. Just keep blowing them, watch the streaming of them, you just blow them and blow them. And after a very short period of time, you'll feel the mind start to even out and balance. It's a very good practice.
It's a beautiful
piece. Isn't it nice?
It's absolutely beautiful. Yeah.
The Royal Bubbler. I hope Queen Victoria used it. It's a nice size bubble too, isn't it? This something like this is great for traffic, you know, if you're driving in town. Stop signs, you know, rush hour.
Yeah, Russians during rush hour, but bubbles out the window, huh?
It's great. Really helps everybody. It's very useful.
We made them a camp out of film canisters with little bits of wire.
Oh, yeah.
And you wore them around your neck just like this.
Did you? Mm. That's great. Film canisters, great. Yeah.
It was a Peanuts cartoon. Snoopy with a soap bubble in his mouth. And he's carrying it. And the comment is, he can be deft and clumsy all at the same time.
It's a nice design, isn't it? Beautifully. It's really brass. You can feel the quality of it. Do you mind just open the door, Anna, so those humans can... Mm-hmm. But make sure you keep the cats out. It's really nicely crafted, eh? Hi, Otto. Nice to see you. If the cat comes in, you can just put it out again. Not a problem. Do you want a cushion back there?
Sure.
I think you were blown underneath it. I'm over top of it. You got a little higher. Try again. Been working too hard. I'll watch you and make it even worse.
Yeah, that's right.
Just get it in the calories. Come in, sit down. Go ahead, sit right in front of me. I'm so scary. Come on. Right up. Both of you come in. That's right. That's right. One's really well done.
Here,
have you got a cushion? Okay.
You
did that really well. I didn't know the rug would slide.
There's nothing under here. You know, I mean, like, in terms of holding the rug down?
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato. Just to finish off some business from last night, it's four quartets, the one that's called the Dry Sauvages, you know, that one. Do you know the four quartets?
Mm-hmm.
Some do, and some don't. And, it, now we come to discover that the moment of agony, whether or not due to misunderstanding, having hoped for the wrong thing, dreaded the wrong things, is not in question. The moments of agony are likewise permanent with such permanence as time has. We appreciate this better in the agony of others nearly experienced, involving ourselves, than in our own. For our own past is covered by the currents of action, but the torment of others remains an experience unqualified, unworn by subsequent attrition. People change and smile, but the agony abides. I recommend these poems. They're worth reading if you ever want to do that. The Four Quartets, T.S. Eliot. He does this lovely bit in that. You can borrow that if you want to read some. Do you want to hear a little more, or is that enough? This is an actual democracy. You actually get the role to. I actually will pay attention to what you want. How many of you would like to hear a little more? Okay. I like this part because it just pretty well sums up our time. It's from the same one of the four. Quite funny, actually. It took me a long time to realize he was funny.
I thought he was deadly dull.
But, to communicate with Mars, converse with spirits, to report the behavior of the sea monster, describe the horoscope, haruspicate or scry, observe disease in signature, evoke biography from the wrinkles of the palm and tragedy from fingers, release omens by sortilege or tea leaves, riddle the inevitable with playing cards, fiddle with pentagrams or barbituric acid, or dissect the recurrent image into preconscious terrors, to explore the womb, the tomb, or dreams. All these are usual pastimes and drugs and features of the press. Isn't that lovely? Isn't it just too true? And always will be, some of them especially when there is distress of nations and perplexity, whether on the shores of Asia or in the Edgware Road. Men's curiosity searches past and future and clings to that dimension. But to apprehend the point of intersection of the timeless with time is the occupation for the saint. No occupation either, but something given and taken in a lifetime's death in love, ardor and selflessness and self-surrender. For most of us, there is only the unattended moment, the moment in and out of time, the distraction fit, lost in a shaft of sunlight, the wild time unseen, or the winter lightning, or the waterfall, or music heard so deeply that it is not heard at all. But you are the music, while the music lasts. These are only hints and guesses, hints followed by guesses, and the rest is prayer, observance, discipline, thought, and action. The hint half guessed, the gift half understood, is incarnation. Isn't that lovely? Mm-hmm. Allow that to horoscope. Do tarot cards figure out the future and the past? What was I when I will be who? He loves me, she loves me not. He's good. Yeah, I think, you know, probably we should probably print him, you know. for the reading. Although, toward the end of his life, he wrote these, didn't he write these when his first wife was mad? I think so. And then later, when he and his wife finally were divorced, and then later than that, he remarried, and he married his secretary. And then two or three years into that marriage, he said, well, if I'd only been married to the right person, I wouldn't have had to write all that poetry. Which shows a certain wisdom. So how are you all this evening? Very well. Nice wind, huh? Did you ever try to take a photograph of wind, of the moon? Did you ever?
Yeah, and you see the form.
Yeah.
In terms of movement.
Yeah. You'd have to do something with speed and stuff like that, I would guess.
Put it on a timer and just let it sit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And just whatever passes, passes.
Oh,
so you
yeah.
have no idea what you're going to get, which is fairly normal, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that sounds just like life.
I know. Let you fill in the blank.
Thank you. I can't. So what shall we talk about? We've got two more things to talk about, loving kind, sympathetic joy and equanimity. But other than that, what else would you like to talk about this evening? Terry and Adria?
Someone last night mentioned about the Bardo states.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, what is the, you know, your view and the Buddhist view of what is happening now in terms of a quantum leap consciousness? Because I'm hearing this a lot with the New Age perspective, and I'd like to know what.
That's not interesting. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions anybody wants to? Well, I like to just collect a bunch of questions and then go roving. So if somebody else has a question they'd like to for us to discuss.
Maybe if you do finish the two more, the sympathetic joy from what you started with, maybe you could just explain how those fit together again.
Okay, we'll start with that. Is that all right? We started with the question about how to be able to soften that great dilemma of always relating everything to a subject and having an object. Is that reasonable? How am I stating your question in a reasonable way? Or would you like to restate your question?
Is this from last night?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, it was to what are the best what techniques would you advocate to weaken this, this attachment to I and differentiate between I and other?
Yeah. Okay. And I think if one has lived for more than about 5 years, it becomes pretty obvious that a lot of the things about I, a sense of self or a sense of I, is a lot of that is about position, isn't it? Whether someone else is in a position of power, and so you have to obey them, or whether you're in a position of power, so you can say, or whether you're continuously trying to make sure that neither one of you is in a position of power. It's always position, involved in position. And there are states of consciousness that are quite boundless. For example, Is there anyone in this room, could you just put your hand up so your elbow is at least level to your shoulder, who has ever seen something very beautiful? Excellent group. Excellent group of people. Can you allow yourself just to recall one beautiful thing you have seen that was really very, very beautiful? Do you have a sense of the spreading of consciousness when you're recalling that? That it's like a spreading out of your feeling of spreading out, of opening out with that recollection? Some of you do, some of you aren't sure. In fact, whenever the consciousness is at ease, open, and exploring, there is immediately a letting go of position. You're not relating from the point of view of self. One of the clearest ways where you see that is when you see something beautiful. Why? Because the consciousness opens to it, loves it. It's the experience of love. Recognizing beauty. And it spreads in all directions. And you have a real sense of wanting to share it with others, don't you? Look at that sunset. Don't you? You just... It's embracive. You want to invite other consciousness. Especially other consciousness that you share that feeling of love with. So quite naturally, if you just look at your own life, you can see many moments where the mind easily opened outside of that self-clinging or perpetuating a position, where the consciousness was able to move beyond, am I better, am I worse, or am I equal? All of which is always relating to trying to understand your own position in order to feel secure in the world.
The wind is blowing a siren.
And so you can understand from your own experience when in Buddhism they say that the greatest way to develop the opposite of ego clinging or clinging to a sense of self is by developing the boundless states of mind. The boundless states of mind are loving kindness, which isn't the same thing as being in love with someone. I love you. And the next one is called compassion. The third one is called sympathetic joy. Isn't that a nice thing? What are you doing? I'm practicing sympathetic joy. That's when somebody's blowing bubbles and you're watching. That's sympathetic joy. And the fourth one is equanimity. The text, the Visuddhimagga, the text called the Visuddhimagga, which is 40 classical meditations as developed in the Buddhist tradition, Theravadin tradition, says that if the practitioner is ardent, that is to say wishes, has a real strong wish to develop these boundless states, and allows the hindrances to subside, the hindrance, the number one hindrance, you can just allow the number one hindrance to subside. But the number one hindrance is wishing you were somewhere that you're not. That's the number one. That's the number one creation of suffering, comes from wishing you were where you aren't, or trying for an experience other than that which is present. It's so simple, isn't it? When you hear it like that, oh yeah, that's right, I'm trying for an experience other than that which is present. I wish I hadn't just dumped my bottle of ink on the floor, and lo and behold, I have dropped my bottle of ink on the floor. But I'm trying for an experience other than that which is present. It's so simple, but it's very hard to grasp that one sometimes. Because you really think if you just kick that ink, it's going to make everything better. And it doesn't matter, in a way, how many times you kick the ink and find out it doesn't get better. You know, next time you still do it again, don't you? It takes a long time before you watch the mind rather than the outer. And you say, oh, this is desiring an experience other than that which is present. Okay, this doesn't work. So this, the first thing you have to do is, like, suppress the hindrances. And one of the best ways I know of doing that is approving of where you are. You just imagine that you approve of where you are right now, in all directions, all around you. I approve. Or if you want to be more, you know, regal, since we started with Queen Victoria, you can say, we approve. Approve. And then having approved of where you are, then you can start to then say, okay, and in fact, not only do I approve of where I am, but, and then you feel your heart, right? Remember this instruction from yesterday. You feel the center of your body, just where the ribs divide, just in front of the spine. It's a little space in there, about that big around, maybe a little bit bigger. It's just a little globe. It's perfect. Somebody blow a bubble for me. And you just think that that area starts to become very warm and feels very comfortable. And you say to yourself three times, may I be well and happy. Say that three times. May I be well. May I be well and happy. May I be well and happy. And just imagine that area just being very warm and friendly. And imagine that warmth is spreading from that through the whole trunk of your body, right back through to your spine and the back, your skin on your back, right to the front, up to your shoulders and down to your hips and buttocks. And you think, may I be free of enmity, disease, and grief. May I be free of enmity, disease, and grief. And just let it spread. May I be free of enmity, disease, and grief. May I be free. Feel yourself in your body with kindness toward yourself. And you imagine that energy spreads through your arms and legs and head. And it actually just kind of seeps out around the whole surface of your skin. So there's this kind of energy just riding on the surface of your entire skin like a U balloon. And it's like a giggle, you know, over your whole skin. Say, may I guard myself with happiness. May I guard myself with happiness. And feel your skin with that happiness giggling. May I guard myself with happiness. May I guard myself with happiness. And you feel your heart again, that bubble in your heart, and you say, as I am, as I am. And then you choose, as we'll do it by space. There are different ways to develop the meditation. Right now we'll do it by space. You image the space of this room to be like a globe around you. May all beings in a space the size of this room be. And you draw that size around you like a globe with your mind. Imagine yourself in the center of it. And you imagine your body shining with this happiness and this wellness. Just that light just filling this whole space. May they be well and happy. May they be well and happy. May they be well and happy. As I am, may they be free from enmity, disease, and grief. So everybody within this space now saying this. May they be free from enmity, disease, and grief. May they be free of enmity, disease, and grief. As I am, may they guard themselves with happiness. Imagine just the whole outer surround of this circle you've drawn around yourself has got a giggle running around. May they guard themselves with happiness. May they guard themselves with happiness. As I am, may all beings in a space the size of this house be. Now just expand it to a globe the size of the house. Oops, there's the cats. Well and happy. The fish. May they be well and happy. May they be well and happy. As I am, may they be free of enmity, disease, and grief. May they be free of enmity, disease, and grief. May they be free of enmity, disease, and grief. As I am, may they be guarded by happiness. May they be guarded by happiness. May they be guarded by happiness. As I am, may all beings in a space the size of this block. Well and happy. All the houses, may they be well and happy. All the mice sleeping in the roots of trees, all the birds, may they be well and happy. All the dogs and cats, as I am, may they be free of enmity, disease, and grief. Keep your mind open to see who you feel in this block. May they be free. May they be free of enmity, disease, and grief. As I am, may they be guarded by happiness. May they be guarded by happiness. May they be guarded by happiness. And so you would continue and you would go, as I am, may all beings in a space the size of this city, of this province. Every time you draw a bigger globe around you. Of the northern North America, B, that's a big globe. How about the northern hemisphere of the planet, B? The planet. The moon and earth spinning together in space. The inner solar system from the sun to the asteroid belt. The entire solar system. This arm of the Milky Way. The Milky Way. This cluster of galaxies, that's 20,000 galaxies. You don't have to count them, you can make it more or less. And then you say, may there be loving kindness. And you imagine boundary dissolving, just let that energy cut. You stay in that state for a while, and then you go back. As I am, may all beings in a space the size of this cluster of galaxies be well and happy, well and happy, well and happy. May they be free of enmity, disease, and grief. May they be free of enmity, disease, and grief. May they be free of enmity. May happiness be their guide. as I am, may all beings in a space the size of this galaxy be, this arm of the galaxy, the solar system, the inner solar system, the Earth, Moon, twin planets, the Earth, Northern Hemisphere, North America, this province, this city, this block, this house, this room, may I be well and happy. May I be free of enmity, disease, and grief. May happiness be my God. Then when you finish doing that, you do a review. And one of the things you ask yourself in a review is, which was easier, going out or coming back in? It's very interesting. And also, where did I have to change gears? At which point did my mind say, oh, I can't conceive of that, and then poof, a sense of looking at it from another direction. Mm-hmm. Where does your mind spatially change its language? Those are two really interesting questions to ask, and it's different sometimes, so you won't always get the same answer to those questions. But you also watch the ease with which that changes in your way of relating in your daily life. This meditation has a very strong effect on your way of relating. Or you might not notice it your way, but you might find out that other people are a lot nicer. A friend of mine once said, you know, it's funny, the longer I meditate, the nicer you become. She was right, of course. It was. Okay, so there are many ways to develop the loving kindness. Another way to develop the loving kindness practice is by category. If you do it by category, you say, as I am, when you get to as I am, then you say, may my parents be. And you imagine your parents. And my teachers be. Some people do teachers first and then parents. If you have a lot of trouble with your parents, you can just say, may my family be. My ancestors. But, you know, it's nice to include the actual personal story of your DNA. It's like giving a blessing on the history of where you arise. And then you do, may all humans be on this planet and then throughout space. And then you do, may all mammals be on this planet. And you just see what mammals come to mind. And then throughout space, and you see what mammals come to mind. And then you do, may all reptiles be. And you see what reptiles come to mind. And then throughout space. And then you do, may all angels be on this planet. And you see whether maybe elementals or angels arise to you, and then throughout space. If you have trouble imagining angels, a nice way to start with it is by, it isn't exactly what angels look like, but it gives your mind a language which angels can relate to as geometry. You know, some people use the five platonic solids, or are they platonic, or are they? They're not, what's his name, Pythagorean. Anyway, if you use pure geometries like pyramids and cubes, and just imagine huge ones made of light, the outline in light, three-dimensional, and use like, you know, four or five shapes like that, and just hold them as angels, and may they be on this planet. That's quite interesting, actually. You'll find some very interesting things arise from doing that. Okay, so then after you do angels, then you would go to, actually you would do all the animal categories, and then you would go to angels, and then you would go to hungry ghosts and beings in different hell realms. And then you would go to it on this planet and then throughout all space. And then you would go to something really interesting. You would go to all formation throughout the universe. May there be harmony, or may there be loving kindness with all formation throughout the universe. And then you would, on this earth, and then throughout the universe. And then you do something really neat. You pick either all formation throughout the universe, and you imagine it all folding it all up into little dots, and then the dots dissolving, or you pick one planet and imagine folding it up to a little dot and then the dot dissolving. And so, of course, then the mind is in a boundless state. These Buddhists are so clever. That's how you traditionally bring the mind to understand boundlessness, is you meditate on form, and then you shrink it down to a dot, and then you have the dot disappear. Isn't that neat? Mm. I know. It's a quick way to get there. It works. So that's by category. And you can get very detailed. My beloved teacher, Namtar Rinpoche, you know the LaRousse Encyclopedia of Animals? He went through and did loving kindness for every species in there. You know how many worms? I look. But, you know, I mean, that's what people do. I guess if they don't watch television or play Nintendo, they got to do something with their minds. And then another way of developing loving kindness is may I be as I am, may my teachers be as I am, may my family be as I am, may my friends be as I am, may my acquaintances be as I am, may my enemies be. And at any one point, and you go in detail with different figures, as I am, you do it as detailed with each figure. And at any point you have real difficulty wishing loving kindness for somebody, you back up one. So if you're at enemies and then you suddenly really think of what that miserable sucker did, and it's unforgivable, then you say, oh, wait a minute, acquaintances? And if that's still irritating you, you go back one more friend. And so that you work it toward just feeling that that wish for all. What could be a better wish than that somebody who is really on your case should be absolutely happy and well? I mean, why would they bother with you? I was perfectly done. May you be happy. And then you leave me alone. I mean. So that's the basic development of the loving kindness. And what happens when you develop the loving kindness practice? Oh no, spatially. Yeah, you can also do it spatially in the four directions around you and just imagine in front of you, and then to the right, and then behind, and to the left, and above and below. And just allow yourself to image, feel what is there. You can do it 5 miles, 10 miles, and so forth. This is another way of developing it spatially. Is that all of them, I think? Yeah. So those are the different ways. I prefer, usually when I'm giving someone that meditation, I usually prefer to go spatially, but that's just in terms of making a bigger and bigger glow. But that's just because that's the way I like doing it. And that's really no qualification for doing it that way. But I have done it all of those ways, and it's really there's a slightly different texture with each way of developing it, but it does come to that same openness at the end.
There's one where I saw you can do it for different categories of people, like that, different ethnic groups and colors of people.
Yeah.
And you'll expand that also.
Yeah, which is the categories
one
when you
yeah.
really break it down. Yeah. categories can get extremely specific.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so then when you have developed that experience of loving kindness, what happens is that whenever you look, whatever you look at, you see beauty. So the fruition of the experience of the practice of loving kindness is that everything around you is beautiful. Because you're in love with it all. Of course it's beautiful. Of course you only love beauty. You have such exceptional taste. But it's true that beauty is in the eye of the perceiver. So if that which is perceiving is in a state of love, not in a state of fear, then what you perceive is beauty. So that's the trick, how to get into a state of love rather than a state of fear. So how do you do it if you're a Buddhist? Is you practice. You start with what's easy and then you develop it into areas that are more difficult. So if you're going to practice compassion, compassion develops into a sense of spaciousness, boundless space. And what you need to do is to establish yourself in a state of loving kindness, and you remember a time in the past, hopefully not too long ago, when you were really bugged by something. Something really bugged you, but it wasn't like a major life crisis, but it was enough to really irritate you and give you a few nights where you had trouble going to sleep. You know, one of those ones. And then you let yourself fast forward to when it didn't bug you anymore, when it was solved. So you feel what it was like when it bothered you. What mark did Ellen give me on that test? Yeah. And then when you figured, oh well, I mean, she's leaving anyway. Somebody else next year anyway. Fast forward when you congratulated her on her new job. But you oh, she's gone and she won't remember my marks next year. How's this? Is this a good... And then you go back to the mark you got, and then you go forward to when you realize that she was leaving. And then you go back to the mark you got, and then you go forward to when she was leaving. You go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Until you really get a sense of what it feels like when it's bugging you and what it feels like when it isn't. And it is like the first one is almost like knitted nettles, you know, nettles knit together. It just keeps catching you and stinging afterward. And the second one is like space. And when you go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, then at one point you go back and you imagine that that space is there underneath that ball of nettles anyway. So then you look at the nettles, at the space, not at the nettles. And then you come forward and you're still looking at the space. Then you look at something that's bothering you now, and you imagine in the future when it's not going to bother you, when it will be solved by some mysterious thing called time. And then you go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And then you look at the space under that until you can feel yourself bring up things that are bothering you and be aware of the spacious quality of consciousness as well. That not only do you see that one smeared mosquito on the windshield, but you're aware of the entire vista that you can see through the glass as well. Okay? You don't deny the blotch, but it doesn't blot out the entire world is not blotted out by that spot. Do you hear me? It's called perspective. And what do you need to have perspective? Space. Right? And in fact, then after you've done that, so that you can feel the spaciousness that is there always in consciousness, no matter what you're looking at within yourself, then you start taking people around you who you know have suffering. don't take somebody who is in horrific grief right away. Start with someone who is bugged because they didn't like the way their last haircut turned out or something. Do you understand? And imagine the space underneath that, and fast forward to when their hair grows, and the space is there, and then go back in the back, and keep working on the space, and then imagine the spaciousness, surround them with the spaciousness of their own consciousness, fill them with the spaciousness of their own consciousness, and then do it with another person, and then if you want to, after you've done that, maybe do it with Bosnia or with Israel. Or with Edmonton. Or with street people. Or with pollution. Start to pray by working the awareness of space. What you pay attention to will grow. What you ignore. So when you do the work on compassion, what happens is that you've developed an awareness of boundless space. Okay? Then the next, I better just fit right along here, or I won't get to those other nice questions. Is there any question about those two? You need a Kleenex ease? Who's got a Kleenex? There should be a box right there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is it the cats? Or
yeah.
Cats are getting it? You want the window open?
No, I don't know that the window will change it.
Okay.
Thank you.
So everybody imagines space invading Shelley's catnip. Look at the space in it. And acknowledge it's there. When you leave. It's quite a different feeling. Because sympathetic joy is having experience the spaciousness of consciousness, then you experience consciousness that is flooding all our space. Neat, huh? So it's awareness of the spaciousness, and then spacious awareness. So that having established awareness of the spaciousness of consciousness with your own being, then that space becomes the real conscious identity, conscious selfness, consciousness moving as a self. Consciousness moving as a Cecily. What a concept. And consciousness moving as an Adria. Consciousness moving as any being, anywhere. The incredible, intense beauty of this world that supports all of us, no matter who we are. The intense trustworthiness of life, that consciousness can perform anything. It's amazing. sympathetic to it.
Who's blowing?
So it's boundless consciousness. But it helps to do them a little bit first in the order that they're laid out, to do a bit of work with, loving kindness and then compassion before you try to go too far with sympathetic joy. The sympathetic joy and equanimity are much more subtle than loving kindness and compassion. There where you actually realize the illusory nature of cause and effect without negating their existence. So it requires some detachment of consciousness from preference to be able to really practice sympathetic joy. But you can certainly play around with it. And then equanimity is easier to practice in its beginning stages. It's really simple to practice, but pretty hard to accomplish because it's basically the beginning point and the end point of all four of them. And this is the way that Buddhists develop equanimity. They do a little bit of loving kindness. May I be well and happy, free of energy, to do something happy to be Yep. Okay. Now then, having established this great state of loving kindness, I imagine standing on my right is someone I love enormously well. Melt. And look, standing on my left, someone who, of course, being a Buddhist, I have no enemies. Someone who doesn't understand me. Someone who isn't too intelligent. No. Over there, them. It's my friend and them. Right? So there's my friend. Hi, friend. There's them, huh? And somebody in the middle who is just like, you know, somebody I prefer to keep in my life as a cardboard cutout. You know, the kind of thing. Like the neighbor three doors down who you say hello to. Hi, how are you? Oh, it is a nice day. Yeah, oh, yeah, take care. The cardboard cutout in the center. This is the one that's going to be most interesting. This is the one that's going to give you the greatest insight. Probably. The chances are good. But then what you do is you start with the one you really like. And you allow yourself to recall an experience which sort of set the tone for why it is that they're so wonderful. Probably something nice they did for you. But not necessarily. But most of the time. You know, isn't it? Yeah. They recognized you. They saw how lovable you were and loved you, so therefore. So we love them. So they're standing over there, so you allow yourself to recall that event, right? That event where you decided that they were worthy of, I mean, they were your good friend. And you allow yourself to remember that event, and you allow yourself to feel that feeling. And then you think to themselves, okay, what were they doing a week before that? What was I doing a week before that? What was our relationship? And you just give a little time for an answer for each of those. And then you say, what were they doing a month before that? What was I doing a month before that? What was our relationship? And then you say, what were they doing 6 months before that? What was I doing 6 months before that? What was our relationship? And then you say, what were they doing a year before that? What was I doing a year before that? What was our relationship? And then you say, what were they doing 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years? And then you go 10 years. And then you go 15 years. And then you go 20 years. And then you go 25 years. And if it's getting dangerously close to your birth, some of you young tads in this room, wet behind the ears still, but that's okay, I forgive you. If you're not in your 50s at least, of course, you're too young to know anything about meditation, but that's all right, I'll forgive you that too. So you take it back, say 25 years, and then you say, what were they doing when they were infants? What was I doing when I was an infant? What was our relationship? What were they doing when they were in the womb? What was I doing when I was in the womb? And leave time for an answer, even if you don't have one. And let your intellect fill in answers, but also leave time for just a general feeling or a vagary to come forward. Don't worry about it. Leave a little time. And what was our relationship? What were they doing before they were conceived? What was I doing before I was conceived? What was our relationship? And then you leave it. And then you go to the one who isn't as wise as that one. The one who didn't do the nice thing for you. And you think, what was the event that set the tone? How did that breach between us? How did the wall develop? What was the wall event? What were they doing a week before that? What was I doing? What was the relationship? What were they doing 2 weeks before? What, a month before? What was I doing? What were they doing 6 months before? What was I doing? What was the relationship? What were they doing a year before? What was I doing a year before? What was the relationship? 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 25 years, when they were an infant, when I was an infant, when they were in the womb, when I was in the womb, before their conception, before my conception, what was the relationship? Okay? And then you go to this one. And this one is where you really got to work. Because you're saying, what's the event that made me not want to really get involved with them, but to be friendly? What was the event that allowed me to just be, like, just skate on by, how are you today? I'm not here. Are you? Oh, good. Bye. That, what is the event that allowed the indifference to develop? Why do I choose indifference with this person? Because you actually are choosing to be indifferent with that person, not acknowledge their livingness. It's just too much difficulty to acknowledge they're alive. You know, please, I'm far too busy. Don't be alive in my life. You can do it in somebody else's life, not mine. Okay? And you hold to those boundaries. So you say, what were they doing? What was the event? What is our relationship? Okay, what were they doing a week before? What was I doing? And the same questions. Week, month, 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 25 years, infancy, womb, before conception. Those are the questions. And you just run through that. And then you do a review afterwards, and you try to just notice what was similar, what was different in the three. That's all. That's all you do. You don't look for rationalization, you don't look to resolve anything. You just ask those questions, and you just go back like that, and you do a review. And you just compare. And that is a beautiful exercise to do. It's a beautiful meditation to do. There's a very profound results from that meditation. That's very useful for that. So what happens with the meditation on equanimity? This is the main way to develop it at this stage. There are other ways to develop it, but for now, because time is running short, I don't want to give more. So that's a good way to develop it. And when you develop it, you develop a boundless no-thingness. Let's say the mind does not demonize or get caught in subject-object. It can see events rather than objects. It sees seeds of karma ripening, in Buddhist terms, rather than you did that to me. So it depersonalizes all those preferences and allows you to see how some things are just moving into completion, and if you're standing in the wave, you're going to get splashed. It also, interesting enough, begins to show you how the waves are moving, so you might even be able to surf. Not just not get splashed, but surf a bit. So those are the four balanced meditations, Andrew. Is there any questions about any of them? I'll have to do Bardo tomorrow night. Okay? Can I do Bardo tomorrow night, Tara?
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Thank you.
And I've forgotten your question, Adrienne.
Quantum leap.
Thank you. Thank you. In a sense, Eliot kind of answered that, didn't he? There is always the speculation about what is going to happen, or what has happened, or what will happen. But the only real event that is important is what is occurring in the moment. I mean, what if there is a quantum leap consciousness, but you miss it? Because you thought it was going to be in Buddhism, and it's actually in what? Islam. Another 10 lifetimes. Or in Tupperware. Goodness knows. The thing about considering time in Buddhism is the same. The value of looking at time is understanding when seeds of karma are ripening. Okay? There are periods of time where it's not wise to expect somebody to hear a teaching. Why? Because the seeds of karma that are ripening are the seeds of not hearing, for example. We were talking about something about that earlier. So therefore, to try to get someone to hear when what is ripening for them is not hearing won't work. But you can use some of the other sense doors. So a wise person is one who does not do kama chando, who does not try for an experience other than that which is happening with self or with others. Do you understand? So if the seeds of karma are ripening for a group consciousness to move together to an understanding, then that's no different than anything that has ever been happening on this planet. What is it that we're understanding? Okay, it could be overpopulation of the planet Earth by humans. That could be what we're understanding. And that could be a quantum leap for human beings. What kind of quantum leap? Maybe it's a quantum leap into the Aquarian Age ideal, you know, of like, well, why don't we all just have an idea and stay home and have it, you know? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's that kind of like, okay, well, let's just think of virtual reality, or you don't have to go out to shop, or You know what I'm saying? There could very well be a quantum leap, like a rearrangement, and I'm sure there is, of communal movement together. But whether or not it's a breakthrough in terms of spiritual understanding, I don't see that many signs of it, actually. I think it's about the same as it's always been. You can distract yourself with ideas of a wave that's about to crash, or you can get down to your own work. I don't think it's any easier or any harder to establish what is reality beyond self-clinging. I don't think it's any easier or any harder. I don't think there's more or less teachers. I don't think there's a greater or lesser possibility for truth to dawn. I don't think we are any cleverer in distracting ourselves than humans ever have been. Nor do I think our suffering is greater or lesser. I think that some things might look new, but if you just dig under them, it's always the same old story. Are you going to go for power, or are you going to go for love? If you go for love, and then you add intelligence, that's very...
If you go for power and then you add intelligence, oh, this is probably a great movement. Let me sell you a ticket to it.
Now, my friend Helen Paulin tells me how harsh I am about these things. And on more than one occasion, she has been quite correct. I have been devastatingly harsh to things. Which really were not, you know, as useless as I painted them. So please understand that, you know, I'm very stuck in certain ways and far from an awakened being. But this is my view. Okay. There is no time like the present. Isn't that a nice thing?
There is no time like the present.
There is no time like the present. Oh dear. Now I'm going to giggle about this for the rest of the day. Be inordinately pleased.
I don't think we should.
You want them? So that's not entirely satisfactory. I'm giving you my view. I don't know what the Buddhist view is. The Buddhist view is that there are ages, which of course there are, spring, summer, autumn, winter, and there are beings that ripen in all seasons. One of my beloved teachers was a man from Czechoslovakia who spent 9 years as a political prisoner at a time when they were looking, he was a physicist, and they were looking for someone. They were particularly interested in mind-altering drugs to see what happened to people, and he was used for this. And he experienced stream entry at that time. So who knows when the right seeds are for liberation to occur. It's not the outer that is nearly so important as the inner. That's my experience. Not to say that it isn't very nice to have proper social conditions and a good meal at least 3 times a week. But don't be surprised if other things will also allow consciousness to ripen. The most important thing is to not court the idea of trying to change what is unchangeable. Because that's where a lot of time gets wasted, looking at what is present and not accepting it, can only be called stupidity, because it is present. And your view is more changeable than what is present. So change your view that it shouldn't be there, and view that it is probably impermanent, and you can watch it pass. Some things pass a little slower than others, but everything's passing. And remind me of your question again.
Mine?
Mm-hmm. Didn't
you answered mine.
Okay.
It was about how all those bits of loving kindness and
yeah.
all that joy all fit together. You did that.
Yes, thank
beginning.
You. I did so.
Mm-hmm.
So have I done it? Who have I left out? Okay, do you have any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
Mm-hmm.
I hope. None? I've left you speechless, haven't I?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's not a question.
Good.
You know, and there may not even be anything, but if there's something comes to mind that you think of in response to what I'm thinking of. And just, you know, you talked about love with intellect and power with intellect. I'm wondering about longing.
Longing?
Yeah. Longing with intellect or longing without intellect?
I would hope that longing is really what would classify as desire.
Mm.
And the most important thing to do with desire is to accept it. To really open yourself right to it, but don't let it fixate on an object. Don't think that outside of you is going to satisfy that longing. Does that make sense to you? And that's very hard to do. You have to keep bringing in the space with it. And so that means you have to be willing to acknowledge those moments when the longing is not present.
Mm-hmm.
Like not let the longing make you into a hungry ghost. You have to acknowledge what else is also present. It's that perspective that has to maintain. If you can keep the perspective, it's really quick working with desire. It's really quick. What happens is people lose their footing,
mm-hmm.
lose the perspective,
mm-hmm.
and then they're just wandering, like just like hungry ghosts. Just
mm-hmm.
like, no matter what they get, it's not going to satisfy or it's going to hurt them. So that's really the key. Don't let it fixate on an object and don't lose your own perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But really start to feel a longing. And probably to maintain the perspective, the best way I know to feel the longing is to feel it bodily. How does your bodily sensation change? By doing body scans, right? How does the bodily sensation change at different times of the longing? Do you feel it more on the right side or the left? Does one side become quite cool? Does it become small or large? Where are you looking from? What about if you were looking from the back? Collect data. And then it starts to move, and then it starts to shift, and then it gets really lovely, interesting, clear. Okay? Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
Regarding the whole age, the new age movement that's happening right now, wasn't there sort of a movement like that in the 19th century? Or about the same sort of thing that's happening now? The whole thing of channeling
continuously. And channeling exists, and psychic powers
yeah.
exist, and angels exist,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you know, crystals and gems and all that. I mean, all of those things are, it is a very mysterious and wonderful universe. And it's, and you're not going to reduce it to, you know, two-dimensional reality.
This is right and that's wrong.
You know, you're not going to do that. It's a mysterious, joyous, wonderful place, and consciousness is quite a boundless thing. And human consciousness is just one point of view. Just one point of view. Dogs see quite differently. Thank you very much. And so forth. And so all of these things could even be true, but to look for a final answer already tells you something. Because there's that little sense of a final answer about, you know, the quantum thing that's going to happen, right?
Yeah,
and
so
then those few
coming.
Elite will go off.
Yeah.
Well, what about us few down? Because I'm probably going to miss it, you know. That's my kind of luck, you know. And if you think I'm going to let you get away scot-free, I'm going to complain. And I'll be heard. You know, the problem with being saved is somebody's lost. And they never just shut up. You know, they keep nudging, you know? Whinging. The people who are lost, people who are in hell,
okay.
They keep screaming in pain, you know? And especially if they think that there's a little window open. And I'm one of the best. If there's somebody saved, if somebody lost, we're all lost.
Well, there's a book, I've never read it, but The Celestian Prophecy. You know, I don't know if that suggests that something's happening. I don't know. I don't know if who's read that book, but I guess, oh yeah.
I've read that.
Does it suggest that?
This is one of those times where Helen Pollan was right.
That's the wrong book to bring up.
No, Helen Pollan was right. On review, and I should read it again. There are aspects of that book that I found a little disconcerting. I found it disconcerting because there was a certain kind of, like, a paranoia. And that division of the good and the bad, the saved and the damned, the ones who were capable of understanding and the ones who were just power hungry. Do you understand? And my problem is that when I look in my heart, I can see a real power hungry individual in there. How do you think I teach? And I can also see somebody who is not power hungry at all. Why do you think I'm so honest when I teach? That's lovely. It is lovely. It's like everything relaxing and moving. It's very lovely. I think it's nice. Just another kind of bubble. Mm-hmm. And even Queen Victoria didn't have such a nice package. So, but yet at the same time, as my dear friend Helen Pollan pointed out to me, and I wasn't very kind to her when she pointed it out, but she's somebody with a certain amount of spirit, so she was very kind to point out to me that I wasn't very kind when she pointed out, for which I thanked her. I thanked her very much. You know, some people here know Helen very well, so they can appreciate this dialogue as if Helen were here. Yeah, she's a very lovely woman. Stubborn, though. I mean, you know. Not like some of us. Now, for some people, that book opened ideas about considering other than the mainstream voices of your consciousness. And that's very worthwhile. And I agree. And I think that once the mind is open to other possibilities, then you need to introduce then something called discrimination. That you need to discriminate when you hope that you can be saved from what you're afraid of. And that's why you're willing to close your eyes and trust something, even if it is a voice you don't usually listen to. That you have to be as aware of your motive for believing in something as you are of what it is you're believing. And if you really want there to be a quantum energy flow, then you better get the quantum from your immediate neighborhood and not decide that certain of the people that are around you are just not part of the quantum. Yeah. We are surrounded by the quantum with whom we are going to awaken. This is us.
Well, I wouldn't exactly have chosen you. But I'd rather leave you in the indifferent mode. Oh, you brought me a royal bubbler. Okay, you can be my friend.
It's the selective part of it that I don't like because we really do feel afraid of the people we dislike. The real truth is we're afraid of them. Mm-hmm. We're afraid. And so we would like a way to get away from them. You know, we would like a way, a nice, secure way where we are on the side of God and all the angels. Mm-hmm. And we can say, well, we're on the quantum leap to go to a higher understanding. Da 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 da. And you, of course, can't come because you're so stupid, and besides, you didn't give me a royal bubbler. Or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because the sun went behind a cloud just when I opened the door to say hello to you, and you were rubbing a mosquito out of your eye, so I took that as an insult, so therefore I know you're a real dumb claw, and you couldn't possibly come with me. Mm-hmm. Who knows? It's always so chancy. Who knows why you are afraid of someone? Or maybe there is some really powerful reason why that makes it even harder to let go. Because the split within your own being, the shock of having that horror happen, the split within your own being, first you have to forgive yourself, and then you have to try to see the other. That makes it a lot harder, doesn't it? Have I gone blah, blah, blah long enough tonight? No? He's smooth talking.
Yeah. I have a question. It's about this whole thing of a final answer.
Yeah.
And
it's a real addiction, isn't it?
Well, as you were saying it, I was sort of listening to my being, and there is part of my being which sees awakening, stream entry, et cetera, as the final answer.
Yeah, I know a lot of people figure that's when you stop.
Yeah.
Oh, just stop then. Oh, good. Where is it? Exit door. I want out.
Yeah. And it's like, without...
The Buddha never said that.
No, I know. Yeah.
The Buddha never said that once. Not once. And in fact, if you read all the literature, it says these horrible things like seeing things as they are. Can I make that contract again? With compassion, well, that might help. But do I want it? And why? And why, Andrea? Because of fear.
Yeah, there is a real
fear behind that. There's fear behind that. So turn and practice kindness without fear. What it is that you're running toward is probably not really there. But the fear is. So first, find a way to work with it. What it is you're running toward is probably made up of projection, mirage, and everything that you hoped could be possible other than what was happening to you in the past. Projected as a spot in the future, and you're just gone. And the thing, two things about that is you never get there, because it's like the carrot on the, you know. And when you take some secondary pauses on the way, they are never, you never actually see them for what they are, so they are always painful. You know? Little reality therapy that it's rather, would be nicer not to have to pay the price for. I like that phrase for some sort of center, reality therapy. I said, oh yeah, that's the kind of therapy I got. And, you know, if you could just really be sure that this was right and that was wrong, and then you could join up with right, and then go to sleep.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right.
Good choice.
Well, you're wrong. What do you expect? I'm right, so I don't have to worry about it. Yeah, we really would like things to be right and wrong. And it's like a kind of a parental authority, that right and wrong. Understand? It's like an authority above yourself. It's some universal right and wrong that you are joining. And it is terrifying. It is terrifying. I really want you to understand that it really is terrifying to leave the sense of right and wrong and just be a human being in the universe. And the best way to do it is in increments, like loving kindness, little practices, finding somebody you don't like and getting to know them. Because they're just you. They're just you. Just from a slightly different angle. You know, profile left, profile right. Is that enough?
Say yes.
Oh, last one. Oh, my.
Blah blah blah. Here's another one of part of my real favorite parts of this. He's such a good poet. He's doing this whole poem. This is the first one. It's called East Coker. It's the second one, isn't it? East Coker. Do you know these poems? How many of you do not know these poems? Oh, Abby, you got a treat. What he's doing is he's playing around with time. He's trying to understand past, present, future, and eternity. Not a bad concept. And he calls it the four quartets. That's interesting, too. And he talks about death and rebirth and what happens between death and birth. He talks about Bardo. And he goes around and he says time past, no, time present and time past are both perhaps present and time future, perhaps. You know, the present and the past are both perhaps there in the future. Perhaps, he says. I like that perhaps. I think that's pretty wise. And time future is contained in time past. Getting a little edgy there, isn't it? If all time is eternally present, all time is unredeemable. That's how he starts. Neat, eh? So then, in the second one, he starts the second one by going, in my beginning is my end. In succession, houses rise and fall, crumble, are extended, are removed, destroyed, restored, or in their place is an open field or a factory or a bypass. Old stone to new building, old timber to new fires, old fires to ashes and ashes to the earth, which is already flesh, fur, and feces. Bone of man and beast, cornstalk and leaf. Houses live and die. There's time for building and a time for living and for generation and a time for the wind to break the loosened pane and to shake the wainscot where the field mouse trots and to shake the tattered arras woven with a silent model. Hope's needle. In my beginning is my end. So that's how he starts the second one. And then he in the second part of it, he goes into this very, very dated form of poetry. Now, this is one of the reasons why I had trouble reading Eliot. Because first of all, I didn't read him out loud, and second, I didn't realize he had a sense of humor, which was my problem, not his. So he starts this, in the second one, he starts this, what is the late November doing with the disturbance of the spring? And creatures of the summer heat, and snowdrops writhing under feet, and hollyhocks that aim too high, red into gray, and tumble down, late roses filled with early snow. Thunder rolled by the rolling stars simulates triumphal cars deployed in constellated wars. Scorpion fights against the sun until the sun and moon go down. Comets weep and leonids fly, hunt the heavens and the plains, whirled in a vortex that shall bring the world to that destructive fire which burns before the ice cap rains. This is a little bit of New Age. And then, he does this. Listen to what he does now. So he does this whole kind of, you know, fire and brimstone and you better catch the wave stuff. And then he says, and it's right here. Well, that was a way of putting it. Not very satisfactory. A periphrastic study in a worn-out poetical fashion. Leaving one still with the intolerable wrestle with words and meanings. The poetry doesn't matter. It was not to start again what one had expected. What was to be the value of the long looked forward to, long hoped for calm? The autumnal serenity and the wisdom of age. Had they deceived us or deceived themselves, the quiet-voiced elders, bequeathing us merely a receipt for deceit, the serenity only a deliberate ebitude, the wisdom only the knowledge of dead secrets useless in the darkness into which they peered, or from which they turned their eyes. There is, it seems to us at best, only a limited value in the knowledge derived from experience. Knowledge derived from experience imposes a pattern and falsifies, for the pattern is new and shocking. No, for the pattern is new in every moment, and every moment is a new and shocking valuation of all we have been. We are only undeceived of that which deceiving can no longer harm. In the middle, not only in the middle of the way, but all the way, in a dark wood, in a bramble, on the edge of a grimpen, where is no secure foothold, and menaced by monsters, fancy lights, risking enchantment. Do not let me hear of the wisdom of old men, but rather of their folly, their fear of fear and frenzy, their fear of possession, of belonging to another or to others or to God. The only wisdom we can hope to acquire is the wisdom of humility. Humility is endless. The houses are all gone under the sea. The dancers are all gone under the hill. There you go. So you notice this beautiful yellow light, gold light in your heart. It spreads through your body, pours out through your pores, above, below, in front, behind, right, left, four quarters. Just spreads everywhere. This light spreads right through the city of Edmonton, spreads through the whole of the world. Wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, or mind, it's just temporarily assuaged. And you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings. So there's less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings. So there's less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings. So there's less suffering. And thank you for your great compassion. Downstairs?
Yes.
So, like, get out of here. Thank you.
Did you get your name on the library?
I bought it for